Hey, thanks for dropping by. Come on in.
Time to retire to the drawing room.
The downhill run. Waleed has kindly left me his smoking jacket and fez for this bit, the drawing room. But we're going underwater. Now, capturing the art of surfing and exploring its culture and history, that's the specialty of one of my guests here in the drawing room tonight. That's Jack McCoy. Now, Jack has been making surfing films for over 30 years. You might remember one of his early ones, it might even have been the first, an appalling pun in the title, Tubular Swells, back in 1977. His new one is A Deeper Shade of Blue. It's his 25th film. Now, it tells the story of surfing from its beginnings in Hawaii and traces development, different surfboard styles, collection of the stars, all the stuff that's gone to make surfing a $6 billion, this is taking the feel-good vibe out of it, a $6 billion global industry. Now, I wouldn't know surfing from my elbow, so to help me in that respect, we have someone who does.
Kind of.
To chat with Jack, and that's ABC broadcaster and surfing enthusiast, Tracy Hutchison.
G'day.
Hello, Tracy. Hello, Jack.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Okay, let's start there. Aloha.
Yeah.
I just have to say, that is the coolest little bit of jingle, I guess you'd call it a jingle, at the
like
start
that?
Of your show, the bass and the doo
doo. We can play you more. We can play you more. Hang on. Hold that thought,
cool.
Jack, because here it comes again. We love the little jingle. It's got clinkling glasses.
Oh. Hey, thanks for dropping by. Come on in.
It's got that guy.
Time to retire to the drawing.
That woman.
That glass.
That
is so cool. I have to admit, I have heard it before, but
never like
sitting
that.
Sitting in the studios with the headphones on, I've never appreciated the greater appreciation. So, but anyway, thanks for having me, guys. It's a real honor and pleasure to be on Radio
Jack McCoy
National.
Aloha. What does that mean?
Well, a lot of people think it just means hello and goodbye, and Hawaiian people do use that for a greeting, and also when, you know, someone's going away, they greet you or they leave you with a flower lei they put around your neck and say aloha. Mm-hmm. But to understand the real meaning of aloha, you have to understand the essence of ha. And ha is the breath of life. You know, when the Maoris put their heads and noses together and they breathe, it's the ha. And it's the greatest gift you can give anyone, you know. If you don't have a breath, you're dead. So anything
there are
I
good
have,
reasons
anything
why the Italians
I can.
Italians don't do this, of course.
Yeah. Anything I have, anything I can give, anything I can share with you is one of the same. And I give that to you with expecting nothing in return. So it's really an unconditional greeting of love by saying aloha. So that's okay. What we talk about in the movie. And it is a Polynesian creed that was taken around the world, especially by Duke Ahanamoku. He was a Olympic swimming champion, and everywhere he went, he either made or took a surfboard with him. But the most important thing to him was to say aloha to people and spread that word. He was kind of the first professional surfer who was paid to go around the world later to tell people about what Hawaii is. And surfing was obviously a big part of that tourist attraction. But it was the word aloha that meant a lot to him and that he took. And
this is the amazing things that I, at the very start of your film here, there was the great tragedy of the loss of Hawaiian culture and country and heritage and spirituality and how much of that was, yeah, clearly tied up in the land but also in the surfing. That was a bit of a revelation to me.
Well, the missionaries didn't see the Hawaiians sitting around playing, and they saw surf riding, especially naked, you know, they run to the beach with no clothes on, going surfing. So the first thing they did was clothe them, put clothes on them, and then, you know, try to teach them English. You don't speak your language, and, oh, you can't do that hula and the dance, you know, and the music, you know, you can't do that stuff. That's sort of all paganistic sort of thing. So they really put a ban and suppressed Hawaiian culture in that regard for about 80 or 90 years. And it wasn't until the late 1800s that a princess, who was the niece to the queen, Liliuokalani, who defiantly told the missionaries where to go and encouraged her people to start speaking their language and do their dance and, you know, let's go surfing. She was a real advocate of the ocean and surfing arts, and she told her people, let's get back out there and do these things. And I think if it wasn't for her, you know, surfing could have been suppressed for another few years. But we really owe surfing's revival from the missionary band to a woman. And she was an amazing story, Princess Kahialani. But that's for another day, I guess.
Well, in fact, it is worth talking about because the whole evolution of surfing in a contemporary sense is very much associated with a male culture, and certainly in a professional sense, women have certainly battled for some time to be on an even keel. But we will get to that in a sec. I want to go back to the essence in that aloha idea, because it resonates so strongly with being in the ocean and harnessing the power, the natural power of the ocean's force. And there is a kind of a great resonance with that word. Just talk a little bit about how that element is conveyed through that essence of surfing, what it's like being in the water and standing on the force of a wave and mastering that natural power of nature.
Well, you know, the thing with surfing is that when you're riding a wave, I dare anyone to say that they can think about anything else except doing that. Mm. You know, you're so present to the here and now and to that very instant that you can't really think of, or, you know, your mind is just so consumed by this. And that's why I think surfing is such a wonderful art form to so many people around the world, is because once they leave the shore, you know, your troubles and cares get left behind. The sharing and giving certainly hasn't been prevalent in surfing in modern times. People have localism, and this is my wave, and my this, that, and the other. And, you know, you can't ride my wave, and don't drop in, and all this sort of stuff. But what I'm trying to do with this movie is really show a little bit about where Hawaiian surf culture started, how important it was to the Hawaiians, what the surfboard was to the Hawaiians. It was their magical connection to waves, and when they cut a tree down to make a board, they would make an offering, and they would wrap the thing up and oil it and bless it at every step of the way, you know. And it was something that they thought was very sacred, because the ocean delivered up these waves that they enjoyed riding. And when you think about waves that travel many miles, surfers paddle out and just meet them at the last little dying gasp that they have. And once they finish riding the wave dissipates, and that wave may have traveled, you know, thousands and thousands of miles.
Around the planet.
Yeah, around the planet. And so the ha really, for me, is basically about the love and aloha and sharing and giving. And surfing could use a little bit of that. And
Did it just get too big? I mean, we talked before about it being a $6 billion industry. I mean, it's professional. Most of the contact a lot of us have with it is watching competition, you know, on TV. And that's obviously really pro. Is it just too big a thing? Has that ha been lost?
I think so, to a certain extent. You know, the surfing industry is the one who have driven competition because they love winners and losers. I don't see surfing as something you can actually judge. I consider it more like a ballet. But that's just my opinion. But there are people who do compete and love it and all that sort of thing. But, yeah, I go down to the beach and talk to kids, and they don't even know who Tom Carroll is. And he lives next door in my next neighborhood. And Tom Carroll was a two-time world champion and, you know, made some great advancements in power surfing. And, you know, people don't know or understand about it. And that's really why I made this movie, to try and give everyone an opportunity to see in a little short period of time kind of where surfing started, the evolution of the surfboard, which is amazing in itself, and remind them about this thing called the Aloha Spirit.
You're in Australia now and from Hawaii.
I came to Australia in 1970 for the World Surfing Contest. I fell in love with Australia. I started showing surfing movies for 5 years, and then I started to make my own. In 2004, when George Bush was reelected, I went down to the immigration office and changed my residence status to an Australian citizen.
That was too much for
going,
you.
Going, if they're going to reelect that knucklehead, I don't want to be there. So I am very proud to say Australia is my home and I love this country and I feel very honored to be able to make films here. They have a wonderful film industry that, you know, supports people and gets us out there. And I just feel very honored and privileged to live in Australia.
One of the things that you pursue in this film, and it runs through your motivation of all your films, really, is this idea of the soul surfer, and that it is about that very powerful connection of your soul and nature and harnessing those things and unifying those things. And a couple of the surfers in particular in this film very much would classify themselves as soul surfers. One of them who could have had an incredible professional career if it wasn't for an accident in Durban, and I'm speaking about Derek Hine, probably one of the most extraordinary surfers I've ever seen, a free surfer, a soul surfer of the extreme. What is it about the soul surfer that you're trying to actually portray in these films that's different, I guess, from the competitive aspect of the sport that is all about being quite calculated about which wave you're going to get and how many points it's going to deliver you?
We don't ever say the word soul surfer in the movie, and I think Derek would probably laugh if we called him a soul surfer. But basically, they're surfers who love surfing and, you know, surf for the love of it. And Derek is obviously one of those people, and I guess you could call them on that level a soul surfer. A lot of times in surfing, soul surfers are like hippies who kind of get a bit trippy about it all, but basically those who ride waves just because they love them are people who have a lot to contribute to not only surfing itself but also to board design and construction. Now, I was working with Derek on the research of this film, and we're sitting in my office and we're reading this part about this guy named Tom Blake who came along and stuck a fin on the bottom of the board, which made it a lot easier for people to surf on. And Derek went, imagine what would happen if surfing had progressed today where we didn't have fins. And he went home, and this is what sort of eccentric, you know, incredible character and intellect Derek is, that he went home, took all the fins off, and for about a year and a half, he spent taking off on the wave and spinning out, and he didn't wear a leg rope. He'd swim to the beach, and he'd go back out, and he'd ride another one, he'd swim to the beach. You know, he spent a year and a half swimming. And then he got to the point where he figured out actually how to work the rail of the board and actually surf it. And when I saw it, we were just starting the production of the film, and I said, hey, Derek, you're not going to just be the writer. You're going to be in this movie. He goes, no, I don't want to be in it. I say, Derek, you are revolutionizing surfing. You're coming up with something that no one's done before. And so you're in.
It's an amazing thing to film. I mean, it lends itself beautifully to cinema surfing. I mean, when you started, what were the ways of seeing it then? Have you sort of found a new way to look at the sport through the camera, do you think?
I sort of started by going to a high school auditorium and seeing a Bruce Brown movie. And at the time, it kind of blew my mind. You know, we had the magazines. We knew what all the pictures looked like. But here's a guy who came to your school, and he sold you the ticket, and he took the ticket, and he ran up the front, and he did some movie, and ran up the back, and turned off the lights, and turned on the projector, ran up the front, worked the reel-to-reel. You know, he kind of did everything. But what you saw up there was stunning, moving images of what was happening. And I grew from that to loving to put up the posters, to people helping, asking me to distribute their films. And that's what happened when I came to Australia. An American company asked me if I wanted to distribute their films here, and I did. And then 1975, I made my first movie. And yes, surf movies have changed dramatically in the sense that they're mostly promotional films and what I like to call surf porn,
okay.
They just have a lot of action, loud music and noise, and people say, oh, I don't want no interest in a surf movie, because that's their experience of what they've had. But with this film, it's really an experience. It's a journey. It's a story. It takes you, you know, to all these different places. In 11 interwoven chapters, we talk about the things that brought surfing to where they are. For instance, the Beach Boys. You know, once Princess Kailani came back, and Beach Boys started going to the beach. They fished and they dived and they made boards and
We're not talking close harmonies here.
We're not talking close harmonies. We're talking Beach Boys who actually lived and wanted to stay on the beach to surf. And as surfing progressed, it became sort of the dream of, once you became a surfer, to become a Beach Boy so that you could stay on the beach and live and work. And Then we leapfrog 100 years later to the Bonsai Pipeline, where we have this young man named Jamie O'Brien, who gets paid $1 million a year to surf, lives right at the Bonsai Pipeline, the most dangerous and radical wave in the world. And if you told the Beach Boys back then that a surfer would be making $1 million 100 years from now, they would have fallen over laughing at you.
What?
So that's sort of where surfing has moved and come from. And
why is it so blokey?
A lot of people find it hard to start. But, you know, in the last, you know, since Gidget, you know, Gidget kind of came along and proved that, you know, the girls didn't want to just sit in the beach and sunbake. They wanted to get out there and do things. And since then, women's surfing have been coming back and stronger than ever. And I'd like to think that we portray the women very positively and beautifully in this film. We acknowledge Gidget and Prince Kaiolani and Stephanie Gilmore, who we all know is just a brilliant Australian surfer, goes through the history of women who have made a real impact on surfing. And I like to think that surfing women are just as gorgeous. I mean, it's a balance now that the lineup kind of needed to have women out there and you know, give a little bit better vibe.
Mm. It's not helped, though, by the surf industry and the surf media, though, is it, Jack? Because you pick up a copy of a Trax or Surfing Magazine or the advertising for any of the major million-dollar companies, multi-million-dollar companies, and it is all about women standing around in bikinis, generally on the beach. We haven't moved past that. That's just been something that is so much a part of how this industry sells itself, and it's a real battle, I think, to get around that.
There's a stereotype out there, definitely, for sure. However, if you look at, there are a couple of surf companies out there who actually make more money off the women's gear that they make using and promoting women's surfers than they do off the men's. So that in itself tells me, and hopefully you, that, you know, women are being recognized, women are being seen as part of the surfing thing. You know, when I grew up in Hawaii, when you went out to Waikiki, there were always these beautiful girls with long hair out surfing. And it was like nothing. It was like they're just part of the scenery.
Just doing it.
And when you go out there today, it's the same thing. When you go to Makaha, which is out there on the West Shore, you know, sometimes there are more girls out there than guys. And so in Hawaii, there's no trip about men or women. Here in Australia, I can see where people would think that, you know, it is a very blokey thing. But believe you me, at every little beach, there's always some girls who are surfing. We have a couple of young twins who live up at Avalon where I live, who I just love and support.
I'm sure.
You know, the girls are out there.
They're there.
They are.
Jack, thank you. Jack McCoy, the man who, with his new film, A Deeper Shade of Blue, is putting the ha back into Aloha. That film's at selected cinemas from tomorrow. Thank you, Jack McCoy, and thank you also to ABC broadcaster and passionate, extremely well-credentialed surfer, Tracy Hutchison.
You haven't seen me surf.
We may never, but, you know, that's the magic of radio. To them, you're pro.
Can I just let people know that if they want to see the trailer, it's at our website at deepershadeofblue.com.
Done.
Just so they can check it out. But thank you so much for having me. And as we say in Hawaii, aloha to you.
You're listening to RN Drive. Next on RN, after the news, and that is bearing down upon us at the top of the hour, Big Ideas with Paul Barclay. Now, Facebook, those guitars. Facebook has more than 845 million active users per month, and that number is growing steadily. But, question for our times, is Facebook really your friend? Critics say it destroys the notion of privacy and devalues friendship. Facebook fans, though. They see a social networking site as a tool that enhances life and creates a true global village. That's Big Ideas, next, or at 7 p.m. for listeners in the West. I've been Waleed Ali, Jonathan Green with you.